I have the extraordinary pleasure of being the one to introduce Sarah. We are very grateful for her generosity in being with us, particularly being with us this very last week of the Brown Bag for the semester. Sarah is known to some of you. She has been with us off and on for the last year and a half. She is here as a postdoc in the economics department. Her PhD is in economics from Cornell. And she is exactly our kind of economist. That is, she is an economist who thinks broadly about interesting topics, including demographic ones. The fact that she thinks broadly and is interesting is demonstrated by the fact that her honors and grants include not only things specifically in economics, but also a Fulbright for study in Columbia. And the big SSRC, the Social Science Research Council IDRF, which is their major grant given specifically for work that crosses disciplinary boundaries. And Sarah's, I think that describes Sarah's work very well. She presented here last year, I believe, on a chapter from her dissertation, a paper that you may remember on teenage mothers and their mothers in Brazil, looking at the dynamics of how young women who are having children, the kinds of labor that they do in the house relates to the work of their mothers. And that is a paper that's currently under review. And the paper she's presenting today still works with Brazilian data, but goes significantly beyond the dissertation, looking at this very, very new data coming out on conditional cash transfers. She has a co-author, Rachel Gardner, and the title of today's talk is The Impact of Teen CCTs, which I believe are conditional cash transfers, on pregnancy in Brazil. Please join me in welcoming Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me today. Just in case you don't know what conditional cash transfers are, they are stipends that are given to poor families as long as their children stay in school or are getting health checkups. So yes, I'm going to talk about the impact of a program in Brazil. And in 2008, they expanded their age eligibility for children to be receiving these transfers from 15 to 17. So we'll see if that has any impact on the teen fertility rate in Brazil. So first, a little bit about teen pregnancy in Brazil. Brazil has had an extreme decrease in fertility since the 60s. Now I believe they're below or at replacement fertility levels. However, teen fertility is still quite high, still about as high as it used to be back several decades ago. So this is going to have a very large impact on the future generations, where a high percentage of them are born to teen mothers, and 20% are born to teens 15 to 19 and below. And we have even 14% to teens 17 and below. So our future generations will be very much from this demographic. And first-time mothers, a high percentage of these are teen mothers as well. So even if they have further children when they're older and not teens, just the fact that they were a teen mother originally may have economic impacts on the family. So there's several reasons to be concerned about teen pregnancy. There's possible health risks. And then in the economic realm, since education and fertility are often linked, we have lower levels of education when there's high levels of fertility at these young ages. And this is also correlated with early dropout. In Brazil, we have only 25% of teen mothers of the age group we're looking at, 16, 17, still in school, whereas 80% of women of this age that are not mothers are in school. So this is, again, very crucial for intergenerational poverty transmission. These mothers drop out, they enter the workforce, they aren't going to get as high of a salary even later in life. So what are we going to be doing? We're going to see, using a triple difference analysis, which I'll explain, see if that with this program, if the people who have been targeted by this program and are eligible at the right time, if they're having a decrease in their fertility rates. So first we'll check that there is take-up of the program. We'll check for an increase in attendance among these girls at this age. And then once we find that, we go on to check for the fertility outcome. And And we do find a small increase in attendance, but we do not see evidence of fertility effects. In fact, we see that there might actually be a small increase in 17-year-old fertility amongst the rural girls, which is a little curious. So the plan is I will start to give you a little bit more background about conditional cash transfers, and then we'll zoom into Brazil. I'll tell you about the program, and then we'll get into what data I'm using and the empirical strategy, and finish off with some robustness checks and our further plans. So first, conditional cash transfers, as I mentioned, they're given to families for children getting vaccinations or pregnant mothers getting health checkups, and also the education goal is another emphasized realm where the families get money if their children are attending school consistently. The goals are to reduce poverty in the short run with these transfers, and then with these conditionalities, hope that the next generation does better in their welfare outcomes. So these have been very popular as a development program. Over 30 countries have conditional cash transfers of some sort, 13 in Latin America and the Caribbean. Latin America was the first place where these arose. Since the teens are older, they are less of a focus in these programs. They often start off with younger children being the target, and then it expands to teens. So this is a little bit less common, so it'll be interesting to see what our study has to offer. Conditional cash transfers have been shown to be quite successful in achieving their primary objectives. There's a lot of evidence that child nutrition and health has been improved, as well as attendance. And for attendance, the increases in attendance are usually happen at the older years where we have more dropouts. So again, this bodes well for our investigation. Probably since we already have a lot of dropouts at 16 and 17, we're likely to have large attendance improvements in this age group. Fertility-related outcomes has been less studied. So the literature starts off with a core group studying these initial outcomes, their primary objectives, and then the literature's expanded to look at other related outcomes. And so there's a little bit less literature on fertility, but there has been a study to see if the parents who are getting these stipends have started having more children as a result of these welfare transfers. And in this first paper, only in one country has this been found. In Honduras, the other two countries he looked at, Nicaragua and Mexico, did not have an increase in births from these transfers. And he speculates it's because of the way the program was set up, that it has more incentives for them to have children. Whereas in Brazil, the limit is 3 children. You don't have money for up to 3 children. If you have more than that, they don't get sponsored. And then school vouchers, which would reduce the cost of education, has also been correlated with reducing teen marriage. And finally, in a paper which is most similar to ours, in Malawi, a conditional cash transfer was implemented for girls. And the authors find that for those who are already in school, their sexual activity drops by 2.5%. And for the dropout to return to school, their sexual activity drops by 5%. However, Malawi is a very different context than Brazil. In Malawi, you have to pay for secondary education. In Brazil, it's free. And in Malawi, the cultural context is such that if a girl gets pregnant, she gets kicked out of school immediately, where in Brazil, that's not the case. One can continue studying. So considering theory, why we might expect that a conditional cash transfer may decrease pregnancy, if the cost of having a child is increased because of this cash transfer, because you would not get the stipend if you dropped out of school, then we might expect that pregnancy rates would go down. Also, if one is in school, one has less time for other activities. And then there's the quality-quantity trade-off theory, whereas if as a family gets more and more wealthy, they will decide to invest in more quality educated children than having more children. Yes?
This cash transfer is only for teens? Because the pregnancy would generate another child in the household, right? Which would presumably generate cash transfers of its own?
Yes, that's true. That's in the next slide.
Okay.
And our Right, so on the one hand, we might have them feeling more wealthy and want to invest in better quality children. On the other hand, at the second point, we see that with this expansion of the age limit on cash transfers, they're getting 2 more years of income from having a child. So that might be a counter argument to why the cash transfer might not decrease teen pregnancy.
But who's actually getting the money?
The money will go to the parents, not to the teen. It would go to the parents of the teen. However, if it somehow gets filtered down.
So if a teen has a child,
the money would still go to the parents.
The money for the teen. Is there money? Is there also money for the child, the grandchild?
Yes. I will get to the exact slide and how that's distributed too. But yes, the money will go for children attending school and also for the babies getting vaccinations and for the pregnant mother getting health checkups. There would be a limit as to how many of these people can be covered depending on the family composition, but potentially all three could. Well, I guess that when the child is born, the pregnant mother is not pregnant anymore, but she could get transfers for that too. Okay, so also, if you're going to school, you might be interacting with more boys. And finally, teens are not really known to be taking the future into account when they make their decisions. So these ideas from the previous slide about investing in quality of children might not be coming into their decision-making process with their boyfriends.
And you mentioned hyperbolic.
Discounting?
Yeah.
That's basically the idea of having a large value on the present rather than the future. Okay, on to more specifics about the program. So, conditional cash transfers were originally developed in Brazil in a few municipalities and started with a school cash transfer. And then in 2003, this was expanded to combine to be a national program, as well as combining other transfer programs that gave money for health. So there's been a huge expansion over time. The national program started with 6.6 million people. That's more than doubled since 2004. And then the amount of money which is given out and redistributed to the population has also increased incredibly. And then in 2008, we had this increase in the maximum age. So here's the details on, yes?
Sorry, the expansion, when it went from whatever, 6 million to 12 million, that was all at once that rolled it out of our community?
Yes. So the 6 million to 12 million expansion was, yes, they had reloaded them. I think they started in some communities, and then it expanded. And I think also at first it was municipal. So if the municipality already had the program, then it was there, and then they would expand to other municipalities over time. And then also the cutoff for which individuals were eligible also changed over time to include more people.
And are you trying to use that kind of variation?
Not in this paper. Just, yeah, so by 2008 it was already quite big. We don't add for the additional coverage. So here you can see how the individuals and the families become eligible. They have to have a per capita income less than 120 reais, which is about $60 a month per capita, to be eligible for Bolsa Familia, which entitles them to a benefit of about $10 per child for the education stipend. And if additionally they are extremely poor, with an income less than $30 per capita, 60 reais, they can have an additional stipend, not based on education or any conditionalities. They get an additional $30 just for being very poor. And then in 2008, we add in the 16 and 17-year-old stipend, which is worth $15, a little bit more than the child stipend. So you can have up to 3 children receiving the stipend, and in addition now, up to 2 more adolescents, so you can have up to 5 children total. If the child does not attend school, the stipend is canceled for the entire family. Mm-hmm. However, if the adolescent does not attend school, the stipend is only canceled for that adolescent who is not completing the program.
Yes.
It's been a little more fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are monthly stipends.
Yes, they're monthly stipends. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that they go until the end of the year that the child turns 18, so they aren't dropping out of school in the middle of the year, encouraging them to complete the grade. Okay. Any more questions on this slide? Soak it all in.
Well, I just had a question about the number. I mean, with some families getting benefits for five children, are there a lot of families that are getting zero children because they don't hear about it, or for some reason or other, they're totally out of the loop?
My Bolsa Familia is very widely publicized and very widely approved, and people hear about it. And they might be out of the loop. When we were interviewing in the about how to sign up for it. Mm-hmm. When we were interviewing back for my other paper, we wore t-shirts, and sometimes people would ask the enumerators how, if they were with Bolsa Familia, and how to sign up for it. Mm-hmm. However, I think most people are aware, and there's campaigns to encourage families to sign up. And it's very high coverage. I think that's my next slide. So this is an illustration of the excellent targeting of the program. So the federal government divides up money to the municipalities based on municipal poverty rates. So this is the histogram of the number of municipalities on the vertical axis and the percent of households in poverty and percent of households receiving Bolsa Familia. So the federal government is doing a pretty good job of administrating the money appropriately among municipalities, and then municipalities have the responsibility to divide that money amongst the population, to the poor people in the population. And there are audits, municipal audits, to ensure that is happening. So we do think the money is going to the right people. There are a couple of possible confounding concerns, which we control for one of them, and the other, as economists, we think they're less problematic because we can just throw our fixed effects into the equation and they'll be gone. But interestingly enough, at the same time that this cash transfer was implemented, they also offered the possibility for municipalities to put in an after-school program to kind of promote citizenship among the teens. So the municipalities had the option of joining depending on different criteria, and about 50% of municipalities have added in this program. Because it's in the same year and targeted to the same group, these impoverished teens, we control for that. And this program developed from its predecessor, which interestingly enough was also a conditional cash transfer program to have these teens go to the after-school program, but the money was given to the teens themselves. However, this was very small, only 1% of the size of Bolsa Familia, so we don't think this should be a problem in our equations. And then the other programs which are happening around this time, in 2007, the government expanded their distribution of cheap contraception. Before, it was available in health posts and in government pharmacies. Now they've expanded their policy to make it available in private pharmacies as well. So that happened in 2007, although there's still it's still questionable about whether the distribution is actually happening as much as they would like. And then late in 2008, a few municipalities started a community health program in schools, which had a sexual sex ed component. It was very small, the amount that was going in 2008, and then in 2009, a few more. So, but having the year fixed effects for 2007 and 2009 should control for any of these trends that are happening. Okay, on to our data. The data comes from Brazil's National Household Survey, the PNAD, and it's a very typical household survey with fertility information, education, labor, they check unemployment, that type of thing. And we're going to use data from 2005 to 2009. 2010 is coming out next spring, hopefully, so we'll add that in once it's available. It's a repeated cross-section, so we don't see the same people, but the same municipalities are repeated, although we only have data at the state level. They don't tell us which municipalities are which. So it's representative at the state level and the urban-rural divide of the state. It's very large, so for each year, in each age group, we have about 3,000 girls. So here are some summary statistics. Let me just generalize these trends. I'm going to skip the poor one for now. We'll come back. So we see that more poor people are rural than urban, or we have more poor people are rural in the rural areas. More poor people tend to drop out than the non-poor. As we get older, also we have more dropouts. Poor people tend to get pregnant than non-poor. Likewise, more people get pregnant as they get older. And the same we see with the mothers attending school. It's interesting that at lower ages, fewer are attending school, and then we have like around 15, we get our 15, 16, more mothers are attending school, and then that drops again. Yes, question? No? Oh, okay. And then back to the poor column, I'm actually hoping maybe you have some suggestions for us. We think it's interesting that the poverty is actually going down as these girls are getting older, probably because they're working and contributing to family, to household income, or maybe because they're moving out. We need to check to see if they're moving out and then being in smaller households, and that's also allowing them to have a higher income. So
their parents are also getting older, right?
Yes.
So their incomes may be rising if they're working.
They might be getting pensions too if they're that old.
But if they're people are getting pregnant when they're 15, their parents aren't that old.
That's true. Okay.
It also be that they have older siblings moving out of the household, and so the income of the parents is down divided by gender.
Yeah, could do that too. I don't know. So yeah, these are some things we have to still go on. Okay, and then here we have a graph, just the first picture of what we're looking for. So on our bottom axis, we have basically poverty. So the red line is the cutoff of eligibility for Bolsa Familia, the conditional, the income per capita below which you can be eligible for Bolsa Familia. So we have very poor below the red line, and then it goes up all the way, working up our way up. And then we have two lines. We did the before 2008 and then after 2008 regressions, and our vertical axis is attendance. So we're looking at how attendance is changing from poor as it goes over to rich, and we see that we have
school attendance,
yes. We have a jump for the poor individuals before and after 2008, but no such less of a jump for richer individuals, richer families, after 2008. So, and there, it's even more striking for the 17-year-old age group. So these give us good hope that we do have the program increasing attendance for these girls.
Are the shaded areas standard errors or something?
The confidence interval, right. Mm-hmm.
So does this mean that the breaks are not beyond the confidence intervals? Is that...
Yeah, so this one is, the first one is not statistically significant, the 2008 change, but the second one, it would be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the attendance, and then we do the same thing for fertility, whether the girl has ever been pregnant. And here, you notice that it's much less of a convincing story. So we have no evidence here, at least in this initial take on things, that the program's doing anything to affect fertility.
And you're using ever pregnant because you don't have pregnant in the last year or something?
We could do that, mm-hmm. And in our later specification we'll take whether they were pregnant
in the past year. That would pick up sort of more immediate effects
in the last year.
It shouldn't make a radical difference,
right,
in the sense that you're not going to have a lot of girls who were pregnant when they were 15, but
yeah,
any of them who were pregnant when they were 15 still had ever been pregnant even after the policy comes in.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, we'll try that. Okay, so now I'll explain how we do this more technically. So we're going to look at a triple, we'll have a triple difference approach. Since in our survey we don't have who is actually enrolled in Bolsa Familia, we can only predict whether or not they would be eligible for the program. So we have three dimensions along which they're eligible. One, they have to be the right age 16 or 17. Two, they have to be, it has to be after 2008. If it's before 2008, the program wouldn't have happened yet. And the last one is poor. Their per capita family income, as reported on this survey, has to be lower than the Bolsa Familia cutoff in that year. So basically, here's all of our different groups of individuals that we have. Our treated ones are the 16 and 17 after the policy who are poor. And then the other ones are control groups. So you're probably familiar with differences and differences, is that right? So basically, if we're looking at the differences and differences between poor and non-poor, comparing 2000 before and after 2008, we're also doing the same thing for age 15 and 18, so that's kind of like a placebo check. We shouldn't expect to see any of these changes for the 15 and 18-year-old groups, but so that's why we include them as well. And here's the math written out. So our outcome, we'll have two outcomes we're going to test for. The first, the attendance, and second, the fertility, the ever-pregnant variable. One thing to note on the ages that we're using, for attendance, we use age 16 and 17. For fertility, because the outcome happens 9 months after the actual act, we are going to be looking at those who are 17 and 18. So they would have, their decision would have been affected when they were 16 or 17, but we'll be looking a year later. And the survey actually works quite well. The timing of the survey, it's done at the end of September, so anyone who has a child reported at that time will know it would have been born the year before or earlier. And then we have our three elements of treatment, and these are all going to be dummies, one for the right age, one for after the program, and one for the income, if they're poor or not. And then the triple interaction will be our coefficient of interest to see whether the program has a significant effect. And then we have just a couple other controls. So we'll also do a few more things with this. The first point is that we try regressing over smaller income ranges, you know, to exclude the rich from the population, see if we get more significant results only looking at different groups, looking at poorer groups. And then our next variation is to, instead of lumping all the ages together, is to include a dummy variable for each age group. So we put 16 and 17 together compared to 15 and 18-year-olds. Instead, we'll have a dummy variable for each age group from 13 to 20. And then we'll look at that same interaction term with each age group with the other eligibility variables, and we expect to find only significant results for the 16 and 17-year-olds, and we wouldn't expect to find significance for the other age groups. So those are, again, our same coefficients of interest. And then our last thing is that we divide the sample into urban and rural, and again, run these same regressions to see if there's anything going on here. So here's the results. First, we start with attendance. The grouped model, where 16 and 17-year-olds are grouped together. So we see that there seems to be a small increase in attendance, around 2.5%, for the 16 and 17-year-olds. that's the main point of this slide. If you have any other questions, the various
columns, of course, are just different variations of the regression. Okay, so that's the attendance. On to fertility. So here's the results for pregnancy. No stars, no significance, so we aren't finding evidence that that these teens are reducing their fertility from the program.
But the way of defined pregnancy earlier was actually giving birth, not ever being pregnant. Giving birth,
oh,
either a live birth
that's
or
true.
A still birth,
sorry.
Right?
Yes,
so
yes.
You've got a big time lag there,
yes.
Which I think would affect girls passing through these age groups. I mean, a 17-year-old could have gotten pregnant when she's 16 and have the birth when she's 17, or she gets pregnant when she's 17 and doesn't have the birth till she's 18, so she,
yeah.
So that birth
so,
doesn't
sorry,
get
this
counted.
Is still the, this is still
so you
the
could
only
have,
having given birth.
Yeah.
We should make the terms more clear. It's ever having given birth.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So because of that lag, it seems to me that some of the effects are going to be kind of spread out over those age groups. You can't say that including 17-year-olds will suddenly, you know, change the 17-year-old birth rates if they, a lot of those girls got pregnant when they were 16. And then it could have an effect on 18-year-olds, right? Because girls might be less likely to get pregnant at 17, which means the birth rate at 18 would have been lower.
I see.
I mean, there's ever pregnant, you couldn't ask because, of course, then they might have had abortions and so on and so forth.
That sounds
but I am just kind of wondering about how.
That's interesting. So, like,
if you have to sort of go back 9 months and not talk about giving birth, but going back to maybe a point of conception where that's the sort of behavioral change right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just speculative.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, what do you make of the fact that you've got all kinds of significant effects in your measures individually and in the 2x2
well, it just seems
interactions, but not
right.
In the difference in difference in difference.
Right. It just seems like general trends have a downward fertility, a fertility reduction generally, and the poor, likewise, just in general have that lower, more fertility reduction than the rich. But we don't see that this is happening at these specific ages.
Uh-huh.
So yes, fertility is falling over all, which I guess is a good story
that
we see. But this program itself does not seem to be the...
Even if it wrecks your experiment, it's a good story.
We don't necessarily, I mean, it could be bolsa familia that happened in previous years, that, you know, because they were educated at earlier ages, maybe that's pushing down fertility, but that's not the story we're testing. We're just testing the 16, 17 increase right now in 2008.
The cash transfer is not directed at reducing gene fertility rates.
No.
So it's just
it would be a side effect, I suppose. Okay, so here's our first variation where we try using the smaller samples with the different income cutoffs. And here, we only find significance when we use samples that are larger than including the 200 PIs income cutoff. And we think this is because the income reported on this survey, as opposed to what the families report to Bolsa Familia, is a little bit different. So the municipality does not use the survey to determine eligibility, so likely to the Bolsa Familia people are underreporting what they might be reporting here. So from that noise, you might not have the exact alignment of the cutoff. So the per capita income cutoff is 120 KIs. However, we see we don't find significance up to 200, but beyond that, we are finding at least attendance impacts, and again, no pregnancy impacts.
And this works better because you're eliminating all of these people who are not even close to the cutoff, where there's no room.
Yeah,
no,
there might be some heterogeneous thing we don't see about them.
Okay,
then we divide up the age groups. So here we have a dummy for each age group. We have all these other
these other interactions that we saw on the other slide are not included, just so, or they're included in the regressions but not on the slide, just so you don't have to have so many numbers. And here for attendance, we have results that look very promising. Again, we have significance only at those 16 and 17-year-old age groups, and a little bit higher numbers since we're, our control group in this case is the 20-year-olds, as opposed to in the other regression, the controls were the both younger and older. So 17-year-olds also have a little bit more attendance than 16-year-olds. Increase in attendance. And again, onto pregnancy, again, we do the same thing. We don't see any effect of the program. We aren't finding dividing by age groups. Now, when we divide into urban and rural, I'm not sure why attendance, we don't get significance here for either urban or rural. When they're lumped together, the 16 and 17-year-olds are lumped together as treated. However, when we divide them into the age groups, we do see that rural attendance is very high for 17-year-olds. That may be what is driving our results. And then the fertility result, we postponed a year because if they have had the child by the time they were 17, likely they had it when they were 16, or they got pregnant when they were 16. And here, we only find significance for the 18-year-olds who would have been 17 when they were in the program, and it's kind of mysterious why it's an increase in fertility rather than a decrease. Since it's rural, we can only suppose that that is due to more socialization at school, but of course we have nothing to prove that, so we're going to look a little bit more at their descriptive statistics to see if there's anything we can see at least that's different between these populations. Yes?
Do you know anything about the wantedness of children during teenage years? Because a classmate who's Brazilian in public health once told me that in Brazil, you want to have your kids really close together because there's a Brazilian conception that that's when you're the healthiest. It's best to have a second kid right after your first kid. So what if there's also a conception that it's best to have a kid when you're young, and then this is reflecting some latent demand. Like, they're delaying, and now that they're out of school, I'm going to have the baby I've wanted all along.
That's interesting. So I haven't heard that particular story about the squishing of births together. What I've heard is that in, urban slums, that girls sometimes will become mothers to establish their identity, like motherhood is very important, and that's why they want to become pregnant. Not that it's necessarily something that they're against. But that's interesting. I haven't heard of that. Yes.
And this is measuring births.
Yes. Yes.
So can it just be differential access and use of abortion?
Yes. That could be.
Especially with increased availability of misoprostol in urban areas.
Of what?
Increased misoprostol, the side effect
that
they generally use.
Okay, that's interesting idea.
Yeah, the most common method of inducing abortion in Brazil.
Yeah, so unfortunately,
we're getting the net effect of it shouldn't be after abortion, and if a girl really wants to stay in school, she's likely to terminate, so you're getting sort of some kind of net outcome there.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's interesting. Unfortunately, we don't have abortion information on the survey, but that's an interesting story. Okay, so those are our main results, and then question?
I was just going to, so you argued before that kind of there was change in contraceptive availability as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if that varied by area, or kind of if that was different, like targeted to rural areas?
So it was targeted to private pharmacies. So I expect that the living cost for living is more in urban areas than non-urban areas. At the same time, if one lives in an urban area, they're also more likely to be near a health post, which already would have had a cheap contraceptive. So I'm not sure how that would have played out. Okay. So we also have a few more variations. We have tried to check the placement of the income cutoff. So the official cutoff is 120 KI, so whether eligible or not. So we tried varying that to see if that might have any impact. And then we're also in progress of doing these other things. The birth cohort analysis does allow us to check the mother's age when she had the baby, exactly, using the mother's birthday and the baby's birthday. And then also we use another data set of the National Birth Registry to see if we can find any impacts with the further data. So here's the altering the income cutoff. So this middle column 4, is the base cutoff, which is 120 KIs, and then we try larger cutoffs and as well as smaller cutoffs. And you can see that we're with that 200 from before, we get significance up to about that with 175 or 1.75 times the 120 KIs. About 200 is trying to cut off there. We get significance in these middle models, but the outer models, we don't. So we think that this implies that we do have, the program is what we're measuring, and that's there. So again, the same results with education, attendance increasing, but not the pregnancy, or fertility. Okay, and then, so we haven't actually run the birth cohort analysis, but I'll see if you have any suggestions to our plan, since you probably do this a lot. So here we just do this fertility. We can use it for education. We will do two different ones, looking at pregnancy if the girl gets pregnant at age 16, and another one for if the girl gets pregnant at age 17. The treated cohort will be if they were at age 16 or 17 during the program. And then we can use women in other cohorts who were also surveyed in different years as controls.
Can I say something? I think you really need to change this all through all your slides. It's not that she got pregnant at age 16. She gave birth at age 16. You know.
No, this is, she gets pregnant at age 16 because we calculate backwards 9 months
before. Oh, you did calculate this backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry. Yeah, it just needs, the distinction really needs to be made clear.
Okay. So here's the equation. So instead of having a triple interaction, we only have a double interaction based on what cohort she's in and whether or not she was poor whether or not she was poor. So that's our plan.
So this question about poor at time of survey.
Yes.
So if the poor is calculated on the
per capita
income. Mm-hmm. And so a girl who has a baby becomes poor.
Yes, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Oh no, I think we don't include the baby.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. If the person's added and then you divide by.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Yeah. No, if you don't include the baby, then the problem goes away.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't. But yes. Okay. So, as demographers, I hope you can give me a thumbs up on this as we go forward. Okay. So, I'm not going to go through the time hazard model because that's what my co-author knows more about, but I will show you what we're doing. doing with the National Birth Registry data. So this is data from all the recorded births in Brazil. And we don't have income levels of the mothers in this, but we do know municipality she's born in, so we can look at the poverty rate in the municipality and use that. So our outcomes are going to be at the municipality level. We have number of births at the different ages, and then we can also look at the births at the different ages as a percent of the total births in that municipality. And what we like to do, which haven't done yet, is to see if we can't find census data on the number of girls at that age in the municipality, and then connect the number of births to the number of girls, and then we have birth rates as well. Of course, we'd have to estimate backwards for 2008, 2009, since the census is in 2010, and maybe have suggestions on how we would estimate those populations for previous years. But we've done the first two, so here's the equation we use for the first two. We have the outcome either percents to that age group, percent of births to that age group, or log births to that age group. And then this is again at the municipality level, so we have the percentage of poverty, percentage of families that are poor in that municipality, and we multiply that by the treatment variable, which would be after the policy change. So 0 if before the policy change, 1 if in 2008 and 2009, weighted by the poverty in that municipality. So here's the outcomes. On this side we have all births, and on that side we only look at first births. So we have the first are the percent of all births, and this is for teens 17 and younger. We see that the percent is holding steady. However, the absolute number of all births is falling for teens 17 and younger for all births, however, not for first births. So, yes?
What's the proportion of girls this age who have more than one birth?
Who have more than one birth?
What is that what you're talking about? All birth to teens and...
I see the question. I don't know the exact number who have had more than one birth, but I could look.
So you say what you're doing? You're preparing for the full...
Not for more than one birth, but I'm including all births. So for this one, it's for the entire sample. And for first births, I'm only looking at mothers who are having their first birth, no matter what age they are.
And you've got ends there. I mean, there's not much difference.
Oh, yes, the ends are the municipalities.
Well, those are the municipalities.
Yes.
So,
and that's a lot. There's 5,000 municipalities, but then it's over 4 years.
Oh, okay.
4 years of data.
So that's all birth for teens 17 and younger?
So it's all births. So the outcome variable is the percent of all births to teens 17 and younger as a percent of births of the entire population of births.
Mm-hmm.
And then the absolute number of the log is just those teen births. Okay, so since the only one most significant is the absolute number, I'm going to only show you that regression where I divide it up into the different age groups. So here we have a different regression for each age group, the absolute number of births to teens of that age.
Mm-hmm.
And we see whether that is falling or not. And when we control for the other program that was included at the same time, that was started at the same time, we do find significance for the 16-year-olds, that the absolute number of births to 16-year-olds appears to be falling in these poor municipalities. Is falling more in poorer municipalities. However, the magnitude of that fall is very similar to the magnitude of the 19-year-olds.
So it would be hard to make the case that this falling in rates is only due for the only due to the program, since the magnitude is the same for both age groups. Okay, so Okay, so here we are at the conclusions. So hopefully I've convinced you that we did increase our attendance due to this program, but we don't find a corresponding fertility impact. The attendance increase is likely due to the 17-year-olds in rural areas, but we're not sure about this increase in fertility that we see to them as well. So thank you for lots of the suggestions. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to look into these 17-year-olds and see what their demographics, descriptive statistics is. So thank you so much.
First kind of questions relate to the context of your study.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really understand. I mean, the way you present your study is you're looking for something that would help decrease fertility among teenagers.
Right.
But you say there are a number of programs to improve access to contraception, for instance. Why not look at those rather than this program, which is not designed to lower fertility among teens?
Mm-hmm.
The second point I had is that when you're saying, and that speaking of what both of you were saying earlier, you're saying that you think the program had no impact basically because the same decline occurred when 16 and 19 years old, but couldn't there be an indirect effect, meaning that you should the program increase school attendance, and we know that there is a negative relationship between school attendance and fertility, so these 19 years old who also have lower fertility might have benefited from the program earlier by staying longer in school and thus delaying fertility. And the third question I have, Sarah asked a question that you didn't really answer, was what's the proportion of birth to these girls which are unwanted?
Mm-hmm.
And more generally, what kind of access do they have? You said that there is a program to improve access to contraceptive in public pharmacies, but presumably this is for the whole population. Was there something specific to teenagers? And do these teenagers have access to contraceptive without parent supervision or through school, for instance, or anything like that?
Okay. Well, I think your second question kind of answers your first question. Since you were said it was very interesting, the decrease in fertility with the attendance increase, or the education fertility correlation. So that's kind of why we chose to study this study, to see if, with more attendance, do we find a decrease in fertility as well.
Let me just comment on that a little further, just to make this, I'm only agreeing with Sarah, which is, we think we know that education reduces fertility. In every cross-sectional survey, we see that association. But I only know of one other study where they've actually gotten experimental variation in schooling, because it's so hard to achieve. And that study found no association. And so, I think Sarah's being a little modest. This is the second study ever that's going to be published that has real, plausibly exogenous variation in schooling looking at the fertility effects. And she finds no association, which is, in my world, huge news. It's very rare that a non-distinguishing result is big news, but I think you're being a little modest. This is big news. If you're really right,
because of the assumption everyone's making,
we've got 30 years. Well, we've got more. We've got at least 30 years of papers that say, as we all know, education reduces fertility.
Well, cross-sectional.
Yeah. And so I think you can pound the table.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
This is like school attendance.
Fair, right. That's an excellent point.
Right. So your other question, one I remember, was about the
Do they want to have children?
What's the proportion of
them? Yeah.
That, I don't know, because the study is really, the survey is very, you know.
Oh, I'm not asking specifically about the survey.
Just in general?
I assume you've looked in general.
If they want.
At least in the case in Brazil.
Like I said, I only know about these anecdotal type and sociological type studies where they seem to be happy with their children, some of them. Others of them are happy with their children, but wish they had waited a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And those that are aborting, we don't observe them often. So,
and you have no idea what the abortion rate is among teenagers and how's it? Because it seems to be, you would expect an impact only if teenage girls have control over their own fertility outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cyrotec is available in pharmacies in Brazil, right?
Mm.
Can they get it?
I don't know, but I thought from just
hearsay. There was a qualitative study that I've seen in Brazil. That's why I thought of that. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't really know.
Okay.
But I might have tried looking at it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And your other question about their access to contraception, again, I only have read about a sociological type of study, which suggests that even though it's, in theory it's available to them, they aren't really socially accepted to be acquiring it until they're mothers already. So if they already have a child, then people are like, oh, okay. But if they don't, then maybe not. And the other thing is they also may not use contraceptives appropriately, only taking the pill every so often.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to look at DHS and see, you know, what the rates are, the different types of use among that age group.
Okay, so when is the DHS in Brazil?
There's the last DHS from Brazil was a very long time ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Can I have mix?
Yeah.
Yeah, or my
cell information.
Yes?
Your outcome, your second outcome variable, is actually short-term fertility.
Yes.
Right away.
Yes.
Is it entirely possible that increased school attendance and we hope more analytical education for a 17 or 18 year old would lead to a long term increased rationality in fertility decisions?
Yeah.
And in many circumstances, that's going to mean lower fertility, which you won't measure with what you're looking at in the short term.
Right. No, we won't. We'd have to wait for a more longer term study. And I guess the falling fertility in Brazil in general kind of supports that claim.
So I'm just coming back to this point about contraception. It seems like that could be a threat to kind of the validity of your findings. If there is some, you know, this, I can't remember exactly what you said about like when
mm-hmm.
this became more intensive, like campaigns, but like
mm-hmm.
in terms of where the government was targeting this, and if they were targeting kind of urban areas, that could explain some of your findings, as well as if there's if they're targeting it to poor areas that have higher fertility
uh-huh.
in general, that could like lead to differences by income. So it seems like your triple difference kind of critical strategy could be vulnerable to that if there was a difference. And I guess it would help to kind of have more information about exactly what happened with that campaign.
Yes. I think that it's available what pharmacies exist in the different municipalities, so I might be able to look a little more into that.
Yeah, but the question is, as you mentioned earlier, what happens if an adolescent goes in, a student goes in her little school uniform and asks for pills or injections or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the policies of the pharmacies are, right,
uh-huh.
in terms
right.
of providing adolescents. So you could have technically accessibility, availability, but practices that actually make it very difficult, especially for girls to go in and ask for contraceptive.
Mm-hmm.
So are you showing that what happens is you increase school attendance with this program?
Yes.
So what you're showing is you increase school attendance, but you don't decrease fertility specifically.
Right.
So could there be some kind of effect where the girls who go to school who do not have gone without the program are not the mothers? There are other dropouts. Because I remember a study that was very interesting that was years ago about teenage fertility in the US, where they were saying the study found that girls who were not doing well at school we're actually strategizing by having kids as another way to access resources, family resources, or other social resources. So I'm wondering if you have some heterogeneity in your dropout population, and you have like two groups of girls, those who will get pregnant and who will not be affected by a return to school feeding program, and those other who will be. I mean, I don't know how you would measure that, but that would be.
Do you have anything
that would be a story behind your
findings? Yeah. We did try to see if the attendance results held for teen mothers, just looking at the subsample of all teen mothers, and that didn't show anything. But we haven't really looked at the dropout composition yet.
Do you know anything about school performance?
School performance? Not on the survey.
And how does the you said there was a 2.5% increase or something?
In attendance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it's attendance, not enrollment. Okay. So how does that compare to other studies similar to yours in terms of the amount of increase?
That's a good question. I should figure that out. And it also depends what the comparison group is, too, because right in the comparing group, people both younger and older, so I should have a better handle on these.
So I'm afraid that with that, I'm going to have to close the questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.